Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
I ran out of air. I promised somebody I would do it 15 seconds, but I couldn't do it. But that is all right. We are now here in effect. You are talking with TD. That's it, man. Elijah over there cracking up, hitting the switches.
You just blew a tire.
That's what it's all about, though. Having fun, man. It's crazy. Sometimes I sit here and think, like, I could support my family with doing this.
We're doing this for a living.
It cracks me up, but I feel so blessed. And that's why I never have a bad day, because how could you have a bad day when you get paid to do what we do, man? It's not possible.
Oh, no. We get paid to never grow up. It's fantastic.
Basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could just sit in this room, in this studio, be as loud as you want. You don't have to worry about it. I mean, when I was younger, if I was this loud, you know, it could have been an extension cord, a curtain rod, a wiffle ball bat. No telling what I was going to get beat with, you know, but hey.
Probably had to pick.
I didn't have to pick. It was whatever was in my mother's hands. You know what I'm saying?
The first thing she could find.
And if it was my pops, I was catching hands. So one way or another, it was not going to be good. I don't know how we got into discipline, you know, but hey, here we are. So I tell you what. When you talk of discipline, one of the things that, just to get into this show, one of the things that really stood out to me was the lack of discipline by Rashawn Evans. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's really starting to expand. I tell you what, can't continue to have that. The Titans got the stop that they needed. They forced the punt, but a silly penalty, unnecessary penalty, hands to the face, a reactionary one, and it's not the first reactionary one. It put the Packers back on the field. They proceeded to score, and that game could have been different at that point. There were other things, make no mistake about it. I'll save that. There were other things, you know, that definitely could have changed the game, but the bottom line is they didn't go out and secure the AFC South Championship when it was available to them. They got a second opportunity, as Mike Vrabel said, a second opportunity at 11 wins and a division title that comes against the Houston Texans on Sunday. So naturally, we're going to phone a friend, Aaron Wilson from the Houston Chronicle. That's my guy, my OG from my Baltimore Ravens days. He's going to come on, and we got my teammate, my homegirl, Sarah Barship from ESPN NFL Nation covering the Texans. She'll come on as well. So, packed show. Can't forget Run TMC. Chris Sanders will be on as well. But as we continue to just kind of reflect on this Packers game, I think really the defense showed it's the ugly head really was reared, you know. And what, 4 out of 5 red zone touchdowns?
Yep.
Come on, man. Like, just thinking of it got me choking. You know what I'm saying? But no, seriously. It just can't continue to happen, and I don't think that there's going to be a fix for it this year. But here's something for you, and I posted it on Twitter, and it got a pretty good response. And I'm not sure if you saw this, Elijah, but the Titans at this moment have an NFL worst 15 sacks. Okay, that's the worst in the league right now. Worst in the league. Team records for the teams that finish with less than 15 sacks in a 16-game schedule includes the following. 2018 Kansas City Chiefs, they were 2-14. They had 10 sacks. That's the worst ever. So you're not going to be the worst ever. 2018 Raiders, 4-12, had 13 sacks.
Trading Khalil Mack. Yeah, that was right after they traded, yeah.
And we're talking about it as a unit. And you know what they did the next year? They proceeded to draft 2 pass rushers.
Uh-huh.
Max Crosby, a guest on this show during that draft process, someone that the Titans were interested in, he went out there and Cleveland Furl. 1981 Colts, 2-14, 13 sacks. 2009 Jaguars, they were 7-9, 14 sacks. The team that has made the playoffs and had the fewest ever sacks, 1979 Denver Broncos. They had 19.
That's still four more. Do you think they're getting four more in this game, week 17?
Do you think I'm going to grow wings and be able to fly to Houston? The answer is no.
The odds are the same, I feel like, at this point.
Right. So this team is on pace for to be have the fewest sacks ever as a group by a playoff team. That tells you that offense is no joke.
They have no joke.
They have no choice. Mm-hmm. They have no choice. So you take that and you look at the red zone percentage where teams are scoring. I think it's like 70% of the time they're getting in the red zone. Mm-hmm. They're scoring. You look at the third down conversion percentage. It's like 53%, which is a historical number as well. This is the recipe for not winning in the playoffs. This is the recipe for a one and done. Now, I don't believe that they're going to be one and done, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit later. But, you know, the bottom line, defense has to get better. And everybody's talking this defensive coordinator thing. Well, I'm going to drop a few names on you guys, and this is really off-season content, but I like to be ahead of the curve, you know what I'm saying? So here's a few options. I'm going to give you three options, okay? James Betcher, right? He is the former DC of the New York Giants. I know there was some interest. He has interviewed with Vrabel before. I believe it was they had a conversation at the Senior Bowl. I don't remember exactly when it was, but I know there was a conversation. That's one.
Okay.
And if they sign him as the DC, I think that coordinates very nicely with signing Marcus Golden, who's going to be a free agent. You need more bodies in here and more impact players. That's one. Next one, DeMeco Ryans. Former Houston Texan. He is currently the inside linebacker for the 49ers. Robert Saleh is probably going to get a head coaching job, so there's a chance he could move up with the 49ers. But if that process doesn't go that way, he's a candidate. But my number one candidate, Jerod Mayo.
Former Tennessee Vol great, Jerod Mayo.
Tennessee Vol great coming home, but also reuniting. Hey, they're getting the band back together. You know what I'm saying?
The Patriots ties. Yeah.
They're getting the band back together. Wow. So I think that would be an awesome move. He's coming. You're plucking him from a winning tree, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He has the Belichick way. You know he's going to have the similarities as far as the scheme flexibility. I think that's the mix that they should do. But here's the bottom line. They can't win with that defense unless that offense is scoring at least 30, 35 points. Fortunately for the Titans, they're averaging 30 points. But I think in the playoffs with some of the teams that they may end up matching up with, it could be a lot different. We'll get into that later. But I think it's time to go to our first guest. And before we do, let's go ahead and make sure that we get the subscription temptation in for you. If you're not subscribing, go ahead and search us. Talking with TD on Google, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, all of that stuff, man.
Everywhere.
Everywhere you listen to a podcast, we're there in your ear. So go ahead and search it. If you find it, when you find it, subscribe. If you're already subscribing, let's get that review. If you've already reviewed, get that rating too. I appreciate each of you. Elijah does too. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byer, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, Bill Withers, Use Me Up. That kind of seems what the Houston Texans are doing with Deshaun Watson. But, you know, I want to get a little bit more insight about that. So what do we do, Elijah? Phone a friend.
That's right.
Roll through the black book.
Or Rolodex, if you will.
Rolodex.
Get real old school.
It got to the B portion, and I said, oh, yeah, that's my homegirl, Sarah Barship. Sarah, what's going on?
Nothing much, just enjoying this week after Christmas.
Yeah, really. I definitely agree with you on that. And it's crazy how fast the season goes because, it seems like just last week I had you on, but that was, week three or four or something like that. I mean, it amazes me how this season just flies by.
And what two different teams we're talking about then from what we looked at even then early in the season.
Yeah, it's so crazy because even, you know, when you look at back then, there was still hope for the Texans. It seemed like that was a group that was going to come out. Because I remember talking to you like, hey, you know, they really like Coach Grinnell. They feel relieved. They're going to come out and I think they're going to play for him. And I agreed with you and they did just that. But now in this situation, how do you feel that the whole vibe and mindset has kind of shifted as we get into the final game of the year, a very taxing year for everyone from the top to the bottom of that organization?
Well, based on what we heard from J.J. Watt on Sunday, this has been a struggle to the end of the season. One reporter asked him a question like, how do you rally from another tough loss and get ready for week 17? And J.J. went off on a rant and kind of in a way I hadn't really seen him speak publicly before, talked about how if, you know, the people in this locker room can't rally for the game that we're being paid handsomely for, if they can't be on time, if they can't do everything they're supposed to do, then they shouldn't be here. And I think when you hear that from a leader on the team, it probably gives you a good idea of what's been going on in this locker room. You know, you're like you said, they played for Romeo Crennel, especially early. They played well, but since then they've had a lot of really close losses. Games they won last year, they're losing. And, you know, they lost to the Colts in kind of the same way, both games twice in 3 weeks. So I think it's been a struggle toward the end of the season. And just from people I've talked to in the locker room, I think there's gonna kind of a relief that the season's over because it's been a tough one.
With this season being basically over, obviously there's a lot of turnover there. It seems like, you know, after the quarterback, there's nothing that's really certain, you know, as you continue to go up the hierarchy of the organization. Marvin Lewis, he's a guy I know that has interviewed. Do you think there's a fit there? He's a more defensive background. I know the next coach is really going to have to maximize Deshaun Watson. Well, what are your thoughts on Marvin Lewis and how he could fit?
I think he'd bring a great leadership here to the Texans organization. And I think that's what they need. You know, yes, they definitely need to maximize Deshaun's talent. But I think when you look at all areas of this team, you need a leader. You need someone who is going to hold everyone accountable, because that's what JJ was talking, right? That people are not being held accountable at the end of the season. And I don't know that that's Romeo Crennel's fault. I think it's probably a product of losing your head coach 4 games in the season after he gets fired, who also is your general manager. Lots of questions at the trade deadline. Lots of questions as the offseason nears. So I think he would be a great leadership role. And now I think the defensive thing is interesting because I agree that they need someone who is going to help Deshaun Watson grow. But when you look at this team, I don't know. I think there's a lot of questions on the defensive side too. And if you can get a strong offensive coordinator and the right person to help Deshaun Watson, if the leader is someone with a strong defensive background, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the defense does need a leader like that too. So when I saw his name pop up, I wasn't surprised, but I do think that would be an interesting hire, and I do think that would bring a different personality than Bill O'Brien had here, and I think that would be a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think you make a great point about the need for leadership, and it has to go beyond just the quarterback and J.J. Watt, you know, so excellent point there. You saw Zach Cunningham get rewarded handsomely for his play. You know, he's gotten a really good contract. How has he been this year, and what do you think it was that warranted him signing that deal and getting that money from the Texans?
You know, Bill O'Brien, since we talked about Zach Cunningham, pretty much from when he'd been drafted, Bill O'Brien had spoken really highly of him. I mean, he leads the league in tackles this year. Some of that is probably the way this defense has played, that he is able to rack up those tackles. But I just think that if you look at the impact players on that side of the ball, there aren't very many. Like you said, on the offense, there's not a lot of guys that we're sure are even going to be here next year. Mm-hmm. It looks like that on defense, too. They have Justin Reed, who is hurt right now and isn't playing. But then they have Cunningham. So I think when you're looking at the players you want to reward from that rookie contract, guys that you drafted, homegrown talent, if that's important to you, you're looking at those guys. There aren't that many of them. So it was he was rewarded very handsomely, but I think that the Texans knew that they need to be able to keep those guys if they are going to build this team, and they need guys to build around him. And I think Cunningham is one of those guys that Bill O'Brien thought highly of, thought he had played well, and thought he'd be a good person to build a defense around in the future.
Looking at these safeties, Justin Reed, clearly he's on IR. Eric Murray, I'm not certain if he's playing or not. But then you got Geno Stone. Man, there's a lot of guys who just aren't available. But Lonnie Johnson is, and I remember watching him as a corner at Kentucky, but he's playing that free safety position. Just from your eyes, from your mindset, how do you think that transition has gone for him? Because it's tough, right? Because you're changing your perspective of looking at the game as far as going from corner to safety.
Yeah, I think, which I was talking to, I actually asked Anthony Weaver that question, what it's like for him to go through it, and he said, obviously, it's really tough to ask such a young player to do that too. Like, I think sometimes you think about players switching positions like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a veteran guy who has played a lot of the position anyway, even if that's not where, you know, where he was listed. It wasn't really the case for Lonnie. So they think it fits his skill set better. And one thing Weaver did say is that he's leaned a lot on Justin Reed to help him. He said Reed has been there every step of the way for Lonnie, and he thinks that's made a big difference for him. But I do think, just like just about every position on this defense, that's a position they've got to evaluate going forward. They have so many holes, I don't know that you can just get rid of everyone. So I think they're just going to expect Lonnie Johnson to take another step forward and count on him next year too.
I saw you had something on Brandon Cooks, and man, that's one of my favorite guys. You know, one of the guys I connected with pretty well, you know, coming into the league back when he did. He's always been positive, always upbeat. In the league, he's always been on a winning team. I'm curious how he's been throughout this process. While it's just, you know, for lack of better terms, it's a dumpster fire there. How has he been throughout that process with you guys?
You know, he's been great to deal with and talk to. It. Obviously, this is a unique situation that I haven't even met him in person. Everything, mm-hmm. every conversation we've had has been over Zoom. So obviously, it's a little bit of a different situation there, but I've enjoyed getting to talk to him. I thought he is very honest, gives good perspective, and isn't just going to say, oh, yeah, we need to do better, and, you know, yeah, this needs to improve. I mean, he gives specific examples of how they can improve. He, I think, is very honest. So he's someone that I've enjoyed talking to, and I think if we were in a locker room setting, that's someone I would enjoy just getting to chat with on Fridays, or, you know, how we just have time standing around the locker room while we're waiting for people to talk. I think he'd be a great person just to have a conversation with, and I look forward to hopefully being in locker rooms going forward and getting to have those conversations with some of these guys that I've covered this year that I've never really gotten to talk to.
Yeah, it's so different when you can't talk to them just about anything. You know, hey, did you see that crazy video on Instagram? You know, what do you think of that? And that just makes the connection so much, much better. So I feel you on there. So we're talking to Sarah Barship, ESPN NFL Nation reporter. With this, just this coaching staff overall, from the guys that you have spoken to, I would imagine you got the defensive coordinator, you get the offensive coordinator. Is it coming across as like a mindset of, man, I don't know where I'm gonna be next year? How is that conversation going?
You know, that's actually a really interesting question, because I feel like, especially right after Bill O'Brien was fired, the conversation was, we can still win games. And we are going to do that. And, you know, yes, we're 0-4, but it's still, you know, there's still a chance that we can have a positive season. And I think as the season's gone on, it's been kind of harder. But one thing that stuck with me is actually what Romeo Crennella said. You know, I asked him about some of the rookies and some of the younger guys. And after the trade deadline, I said, you know, is the goal now to evaluate the pieces that you have for next year and kind of look at them so you can make a decision on who, you know, you are going to keep around and whether they can be in the plans for next year? And he said, no, the goal is to win. Mm. Like, if we can look at those guys, great. But you don't talk to teams. Like, when teams are winning, you're not asking questions about, you know, why isn't this young guy getting playing time? But when you're losing, that is kind of what the conversation goes to. So they've been trying to win. I think part of it is, I mean, I don't know if Romeo Crennel, I'll be interested to see what he says about whether he wants to coach past this year. But I think for Anthony Weaver and Tim Kelly, I think there's probably a little bit of like, this is my resume going forward. And obviously, Deshaun Watson has done a great job, whether or not that's because of Tim Kelly calling his plays, but he's done a great job this year, and he's having a career season. On the flip side, Anthony Weaver wasn't given a lot of pieces to work with on this defense. I really think they didn't invest in this defense getting better. They were hoping that some of the players took a step forward, and we didn't see that this year. So I'll be curious to see how teams evaluate him, because I don't think you can look at this defense and say, oh, wow, you're just a bad coach, and that's why they're so bad. But obviously it can't be a great feeling to be going into job interviews knowing that this is kind of what teams are looking at.
Excellent point, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because so many times, right, they just blame the coach, but you have to have the horses to run the race, or at least finish it. And you can't run that race competitively if you don't have the horses. That's an excellent point. Before I get you out of here, I know you have the post about some of the moves that the next GM may have to make. And I'll say this, God bless that GM, because $18 million over the cap, limited draft capital. If I was interviewing for that job, I would tell them, like, listen, you're not going to be able to judge me on the first year or two. We need to be in this together for the long haul. So that being said, I'll drop one name from it. The rest of the names, and there are some really intriguing names that you're going to have to go to the post to check out on ESPN.com under the Texans page. But the one name that I thought was really interesting, J.J. Watt. I mean, is it really conceivable that this team could move on from him while they blow this whole thing up?
You know, if you had asked me at the beginning of the season, I would have said no way J.J. Watt is going to finish his career in Houston. But there have been clues kind of all along. Like, he had a really high cap hit this year and no guaranteed money. And when I asked him before the season, do you want to sign a new, you know, would you be interested in signing an extension if they came to you to try and work with their salary cap? Because obviously they paid Deshaun Watson, they paid Laremy Tunsil. And he said, no, you know, I want to play on this contract. And I just think that it's not going to be a popular decision in Houston, but I think with a new general manager coming in, offers a new perspective on someone he did not draft. And so I think you have someone with a clear mind making that decision and looking at who J.J. Watt is on paper and on the field without the emotional connection to Houston, because he has done so much for Houston.
Yes.
So I just think that he's made it clear that he doesn't want to play for a, you know, on a rebuilding team. And maybe it won't be a true rebuild because Deshaun Watson is still your franchise quarterback, but I think when it comes down to it, they're not competing for a Super Bowl next year probably. I mean, this defense is pretty far away. And if that's his last year on his contract, if he's owed $17.5 million, that's not guaranteed, does he want to be there? Or is it a win-win situation for him to be traded to a team where he feels he can win a ring, for the Texans to lose that salary, and the Texans to maybe get draft pick compensation because they desperately need that too? To me, that seems like a win-win for both parties, mm-hmm. even if it will be very sad for the city of Houston that J.J. Watt no longer plays for the Texans.
Send them to the 49ers. I think that would be a good match right there. Send them to San Francisco. They have the money to absorb that. They'll probably end up parting ways with D Ford. And, you know, if you could make that swap and have him occupy that 3 and 5 technique, I think they'll be in good shape. So 49ers, hey, I'm going to have to call Nick about that one, you know what I mean, and let him know what my thoughts are on there.
Let him know. Tell him I'll write a story with him if he wants to get into that.
There you go. Well, Sarah, hey, I really appreciate it. It's always good to get on here and talk a little shot with you. Great having a conversation. And the information you bring is always on point. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you go to ESPN.com. Check out the Texans page, especially this week leading up to the season finale, a game that your team needs in order to make it to the playoffs, to win the AFC South Division title. Sarah, once again, thanks a lot, and we will catch up at some point, maybe at a summit if they ever do that. But, we'll see each other at some point.
It was great to talk to you. I hope that maybe at a combine or
yeah.
maybe we'll get lucky in an owner's meeting. I'm still hopeful.
Yeah, there you go. Look, see, that's what I'm talking about. She's being nearsighted, bringing up the events coming up. I'm pushing it all the way back. So, but okay, Sarah, you have a happy new year, and I definitely wish you and your family the best, especially that little one, and then we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
All right.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Wait a minute, is this thing on? All right. What are we? Yeah. It's that time of the week. It is time to take it to Run DMC. I got my guy Chris Sanders here. You know what? We're gonna jump right into it. We're not to do the song because I don't have my thinking cap on and I'm not gonna know the lyrics and I don't feel like striking out. So what's good with you, man? I hope you had a good holiday.
Man, it was, man. I think I ate like 7 turkeys.
7?
I mean, 7. And then I had some ham on the side and some then after that I had a big old bowl of cereal. Come on, man. I'm trying to get my buff on.
Oh, so I guess you're gonna have to take an extra trip to Mandu.
Oh wow. Everybody tell you look like Gary Cohen?
Before I shaved my head, they did used to tell me that.
I mean, you was doing the whiteboard Wednesdays. I was like, man, is that Gary Coleman? I'm like, oh, no, that's my man TD. My bad.
Hey, you know, real talk, I always get Jimmy Rollins for some reason. When I'm back in Philly, I've had so many people mistake me for Jimmy Rollins. It's crazy.
No way.
It's crazy. And then the ladies, they mistake me for Common. So, you know, I don't get down, you know what I mean? I don't get down, but when they say you look like Common, that always tells me green light.
I thought it was Tyrone Hill, man.
Hey, Sam Cassell, cut that out. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and get into this with you, George Lynch, and let's just look at what Derrick Henry has in front of him. Man. He needs 223 yards to get 2,000. I think that's kind of far-fetched, but his last two games against the Texans, he had 200 yards, 212 and then 211. So there's still a chance.
I mean, I think he's got a chance, and the reason why I say he's got a chance is because everybody on his team wants him to get it. Mm. So if you have the offensive line wanting to get it, the receivers wanting to get it, you're going to see a different intensity with them running the ball. And then away from that, they just came off a tough loss against Green Bay, so they want to prove to everybody that they're a top-tier team. So you better believe they're going to come out running the ball and being physical. So I think he's going to get 223.
Looking back at that Green Bay game, what was it that you think made the rushing attack not as effective as it normally was? Was it just having that deficit?
Yeah, you know what it was, man. As I said this earlier in the week, that I thought Green Bay was a finesse team, even on offense and defense. But watching their front and watching their safeties and watching their corners, they were physical, man.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. They were physical, and I think the Tennessee Titans were surprised at how physical that Green Bay was. I mean, because we're looking at Green Bay as a finesse team on offense, defense, and special teams. But if you look at what they did that made them so good, they were physical. Look at the running back, Dylan.
Yeah.
Dylan was running through the Titans' face. I mean, that's what it was. It wasn't more of just a scheme. I mean, Green Bay's been doing that all year.
Mm-hmm.
But the physicality of what they did and how they did it, it was incredible.
Yeah, when you look at that front, you know, you got Rashawn Gary, you got Kenny Clark, and obviously the Smith brothers. And I've always said it was all about controlling the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And that's what those guys did. They were able to get to Henry before he really got that momentum and was able to square his shoulders up. So that was a big thing. But when you look at this game coming up against the Texans, I know you mentioned 223, but, you know, putting your thinking cap on and looking at how the matchup is, what is your outlook for Derrick Henry and the rushing attack? How influential can it be?
This is my opinion. I may be wrong, but I think it's going to be huge. And I know the main focal point is not going to be to get the 2,000 yards, but it's going to be carrying momentum into the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, I know they're thinking that in the back of their mind, 2,000 yards. Yeah, we want to get Derek. But they don't want to go out of here and have a bad rushing day and then go into the playoffs with a bad taste in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at what the Tennessee Titans did last year when they played Baltimore and they played the Patriots, the reason why they did well is because they carried that momentum from their last game. So they're going to come out on fire. They're going to come out upset. They're going to come out physical. And that's why I think that – I hate to say this – that the Tennessee Titans are going to – they're going to blast these dudes, man, because they're upset. They're embarrassed on national TV.
So you're predicting a mollywhopping.
Mollywhop. But now, I mean, because, you know – I mean, you're on national TV. You get to show everybody that you're an elite team, and you get beat 40-16 mm-hmm. or 40-14. That's not good, Bob.
That was terrible.
That was terrible.
How important is it for them to? Because, look, if you look at their losses, in each of them, they only scored one touchdown in the first half. in their loss. Well, with the exception of the Colts game, because they got out to the early start with them. But that being said, how important is it for this team to receive the coin toss? Because normally, defense sets the tone, but how important? So spinning it to this game, how important is it?
Man, it's very important because, listen, it could have been totally different if the Tennessee Titans would have got the coin toss last week and went down there and put a 15-play drive on and scored a touchdown. And now the pressure's on Rodgers. But look at what it did to us. We got the ball, but we gave it to them. I mean, we won the coin toss, but we deferred. And look what happened. They had the momentum. So I think it is. The key to the game is winning the coin toss, going down there and putting doubt in the Texans' mind to be like, you know what? I understand that J.J. Watt said an inspirational speech. I understand y'all got Watson. I understand y'all got, you know, Cook at receiver. I understand you got some good players. But guess what? We're about to run through your face.
No doubt about it. And I'm a firm believer of whatever unit you have is the strongest, that's who you want out on the field first.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe that strongly. And knowing how that defense has been playing, that's an easy way to put yourself in a likely 7-0 hole. So I'm with you there. You mentioned J.J. Watt in the speech. I'm really curious. I mean, I know how I took it, but I'm really curious how, if you were in that locker room, how you would have taken the, I guess you could call it speech. I call it a presentation, obviously, from the tone of my voice. I'm not too fond of it, but how would you take that?
You know what? As a player and as a teammate, I respect what he did. I mean, I wish he would have did it behind closed doors. Mm. But if he came to us and said, you know what, if you guys are not working hard, you guys are not doing this, we need to play hard and be professionals. I mean, I respect that. But first of all, Nick, can I just rewind? I wouldn't be in that position. First of all, if I know that I'm playing NFL football, you ain't got to tell me to work hard. You ain't got to tell me to go out and do that. I remember one time I did a speaking engagement with Chris Hope, and Chris Hope said this. He said, why would I work hard all my life to get to the NFL, and then when I get there, I stop working? You ain't got to tell me. Ain't got to tell me. But I think that with him saying that, you're going to see a fiery team. But I think if we get the coin toss, we're going to hit them in the mouth.
Oh, so you really do think that presentation is going to impact the performance of the teammates?
Yeah. And the Academy Award goes to J.J. Watt.
Oh, yeah. He definitely put himself up there for the award. All right. Yeah. So, I mean, you predicted 200-plus for Henry. You predicted a molly whopping. I guess there's not really much more to talk about because you got it all right there. So we're going to cut you loose. I know you got a few other things that going on this week, and we'll reconvene right before that game on Sunday. Always fun to talk shop, man. I appreciate you.
Man, I appreciate it, too. And before we go, man, I want to say, you know, we had that bombing last week.
Yeah.
I want to really say, man, I want to thank the first responders. I know everybody to go out and put their lives on the line, and hearing the cops talk about how they put themselves on the line, that's beautiful, man. If we have more people like that in the world to sacrifice and put their life on the line, we have a better world. So I thank the first responders for responding and putting their life in jeopardy for us.
No doubt about it, man. And I'm going to echo that because watching that video of them sprinting down there and man, like that's those, you know, how you got the thing where you'll call one of your homies hero. Those are the guys that are the heroes, man. That's
those
official.
Are the heroes. Yep.
And you're my hero. I'll say it this time. How about it?
Jeff, you my hero, man. I love Gary Coleman. You my hero.
All right, Todd Bridges.
What you talking about, Willie?
There you go. Good. All right, man. I'll holler.
All right, have a good one, man.
All right, now.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break. It's only right. See, I got OG music, but I got OG music from Houston. You know what I'm saying? That's how we do it. Because my OG in Houston, Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle, is joining the show. And ladies and gentlemen, this is, you talk about a mentor. You talk about someone who is always encouraging, someone who builds confidence. This is one of my three primary sources of all of that. So I'm smiling as I say it. Aaron, I really appreciate you coming on, man. It's always great to talk shop and catch up with you.
Yeah, it's great to chop it up with you, too. I'm smiling, too. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, wow, This is an interesting game. Mike Vrabel said it's rare you get a second chance to clinch a division and win 11 games, but that's what this Titans team has. When you look at this Texans group and these players, what do you think is their mindset as they're getting ready for this game?
Quite honestly, I think they'd like to have a respectable showing, not get hurt. And obviously, you always want to win a football game, but, you know, get into this offseason and find out, you know, who you're going to be playing for, who's going to be the boss, who's going to be the GM, who's going to be the coach. And, you know, at this time of year, a lot of guys are thinking about time off, vacation, training, kind of reset, reboot for next year. It's been a long, tough year, and they've only won 4 games, and things are, you know, pretty ugly. And, yeah, I think they just like to go out with any modicum of respectability, but also know that, you know, beating the Titans is not a easy task. It's something that obviously they played a good game with them last time. It was a really exciting football game, but the circumstances were a lot different. Mm. Yeah, Deshaun Watson's still a part of it, and they got David Johnson back out there, but this defense has lost a lot. They've lost Will Fuller and Bradley Roby to suspensions, offensive player Will Fuller, wide receiver, game-breaking presence, Roby, their best corner, and it's been a tough year. They only lost P.J. Hall, tore his pectoral earlier this season, lost a lot of good football players, and they weren't that good even when they had everybody.
That's crazy.
Qualify it.
That's crazy. But
yeah, I mean, they're a team that the biggest priority, you know, it's what's going on upstairs with the owner and the team president trying to find new leadership.
So being as though there has been talk that Deshaun Watson may not play, I mean, is there talk to that, like relevance to that talk, or is that just that conversation, just talk?
Which was that as far as what relevance to whom?
Yeah, that was kind of like a who's on first question. I apologize. They're going into this week, like there was a lot of conversation that Deshaun Watson may not play in this season finale.
Oh, yeah. So Deshaun's intention is to play.
Okay.
And I expect him to play. There's really nothing structurally wrong with the elbow. It's a funny bone ulnar deal that he first heard against Chicago, where he banged the elbow against Roquan Smith's helmet. And in this past game, he got slammed to the ground by Sam Hubbard while he had his hand stuck in the face mask. So it was awkward. Mm. And then he was able to go back in the game. He didn't really throw great when he went back in, but it had just happened. He was back in the game very quickly. And I don't know if he'll be on the injury report, if it'll say elbow or not, but I do expect him to play. He has not been on the injury report the entire season. My expectation is there's a small chance that he gets on there. I just don't think he's very hurt. He's, you know, very tough, and he still wants to play. I think he wants to pad his stats a little bit. He's already at a franchise record, 30 touchdown passes. He's over 4,000 passing yards. He's had a really good year. I think he's thinking, I will, you know, try to get a win and get some stats.
Yeah, and quietly,
he's capable of doing that.
You're right, because he quietly has had an outstanding year, and he's one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch. So I always, look at Texans game when I can. He's definitely had a great year. But how do you think, like, this losing? Because one of the things that I've been told is in that building, like, it's just known that he is a guy that refuses to give up, refuses to think that he's in a situation where he's going to lose. So that being said, how has that really impacted his attitude and his approach and everything, especially like with you guys? Well, what can you sense from it?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's frustrated by it. He's saddened by it. He's angry about it. He's a competitor. He's a winner. He doesn't like this. This is something that bothers him, something that bothers J.J. Watt, obviously, you know, going off of the rant that he had. It was like almost like a Jim Mora playoffs type of that level. Yeah, I think when you look at Deshaun, he's been fairly unflappable where he's tried to still maintain his professionalism. And I think he's done a nice job, and he's shown a lot of leadership. He's one of the reasons why people want this job, why people want to come work here, even though they don't have draft picks in the first round or the second round, and they have a bit of a tight cap space situation for the off season. They're about $18 million over. They could probably fix that. But yeah, I look at it and I think it's commendable of him. That's a word that keeps coming up to me. That nice. Comes to my mind. Commendable, because it would have been easy for him to have a different, you know, attitude about it. And he didn't. He really wanted to, I think, just separate himself a little bit and show, hey, no matter what, I'm always going to ball out.
And we're talking to Aaron Wilson from the Houston Chronicle, Houston Texans reporter and insider. You mentioned J.J. Watt, and you mentioned his rant. How do you think this team is going to respond to that? I mean, do you think that that's something that, will make them play better? Because that's something that I'm seeing. People think that, hey, this is going to make that, team play better in, the season finale. That really is, a meaningless game for them, in essence.
Right. I think that it's mixed. Obviously, the fans and Romeo Crennel liked it. I think for some of the guys, they didn't appreciate it. And some guys were like, yeah, you're preaching for the choir. That's what I agree with you wholeheartedly. And he did not specifically call anyone out. The only one he's called out this whole year was Ross Blacklock, who's had a disappointing first season, their rookie top draft pick from TCU, who he criticized after the Ravens game when he was ejected for throwing a punch, and he called his actions stupid and selfish. And, you know, some people thought, well, are you going a little far? You know, you're throwing this young player under the bus. But, you know, I feel like JJ has the stature to be able to, you know, say what he wants.
Right.
And, you know, he's a three-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's a gold jacket guy. And I don't have a problem with it in the sense that, you know, he didn't name names. He said, if you don't show up, if you don't do this, he was very clear. If you don't get your lifts in, you don't do what you're supposed to do, you shouldn't be here. Because, you know, they get paid a lot of money to play this game. I think his point overwhelmingly was well received. I do think some guys felt like, hey, you know, are you having the best year? Are you doing everything you can? And I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like with anything. You never, when you make a strong statement, is everyone overwhelmingly going to agree with you? Is everybody going to say, yeah, you know, definitely, I'm good with that? No, I think, you know, people can have different opinions. That's the nice thing about a democracy.
Yeah.
Last time I checked.
Yeah, for sure. It offers conversation opportunities. Will Fuller. All right, he's going to be a free agent. I mean, what? You had the test. You know, he was playing really well. You have the positive PED test. What happens with him?
Right. So they shopped him at the trade deadline and didn't get the offers that they wanted. And then after that, he continued to play very good football. Mm-hmm. He wasn't happy about being shopped, even though they didn't bite on these bad offers in terms of value. And now you either have to franchise tag him or he's going to hit free agency. If he hits free agency, I think it'll become too expensive for them.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes like a $15 million a year kind of thing.
It's just crazy. You know, so many things that have fallen apart for that organization so quickly. Last thing for you, with the departure of Bill O'Brien, like once he was out of the door, was there a difference as far as the vibe from what you sense?
I think the vibe right now, you know, there's some negativity right now surrounding the franchise because of, you know, the way things have gone.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at everything with Bill O'Brien to the aftermath of that, I think there's some issues here. They've got to get their culture right.
I guess we'll see how they go about doing that. It could be Arthur Smith. It could be Eric Bieniemy. I wouldn't want to be in that situation.
I feel like getting Eric Bieniemy though is going to be tough for him because they, you know, there's a lot of competition for him, and I know that the quarterback here, Deshaun, is interested in him. But you know, it's going to be up to the owner, and they're going to talk to a lot of people. So you know, you're talking about Brian Daboll. You're talking about Arthur Smith, you're talking about, you know, from the Colts, Matt Eberflus, Brian Schottenheimer. And then on the other side, I think they'll talk to Brandon Staley. I think there are going to be a lot of guys, going to be a lot of interviews, and they want to get the GM first.
Right.
So it's a process, and it's going to take some time.
Well, I'm sure it's going to keep you busy, and you'll be on top of it, and we'll be looking at all the work that you put out. Aaron, I appreciate you jumping on, man. Always good, like I said, to talk shop with your OG. So, man, until next time, man, we got to catch up at some point.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm around. Happy New Year's, and, yeah, it's good to talk to you.
Yeah, for sure, man. Happy New Year.
This is Corey Davis, and you're talking with TD.
Yeah, that Beanie Siegel, feel it in the air. Had to get my man Beans up in there. But as we wrap this show up, a couple things to look at as far as the matchups that the Titans could have in this wild card game. Obviously, they're looking at the 4 seed. That's probably where it'll end up being. But, you know, when you look at what's on the table, we start to allude to it a bit earlier just about how this offense is going to have to score points. I tell you something that's really interesting to me, and the best matchup, in my opinion, for the Titans would be the Miami Dolphins. But that Dolphins defense is pretty good.
Got a lot better.
It has gotten a lot better. I know they're pretty they may be. I'll have to look it up for sure. But the last time I checked, they were among the tops in the league in third down conversion. You know, something that we always point to for the Titans defense. I'm pretty sure the Dolphins are top, and it's around like 33%, if I remember correctly, but that's something. So, you know, three and outs, you can't have those. Not with this team, you know, this defense that the Titans have playing like that. And, yes, the Dolphins are number one in the league. It's 30.6. That's the opponent third down conversion percentage. Right behind them are the Ravens. That's the team. Mm-mm.
You don't want the Ravens.
Don't want to see the Ravens in that first game. Mm-mm. They are playing hot. Everything is coming back together. You got the rushing attack coming on with Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, and Andrews. Remember Ingram.
Yeah.
Mark Andrews, the tight end, also is an issue.
Yeah.
And Marquise Brown is a speedster. I put Adoree Jackson on him, and don't worry about it, but mm-hmm. Ravens are a team that I don't think they want to face. The Dolphins would be a good matchup because you got Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's a turnover machine, mm-hmm. but it just really with him, he's a wild card. You don't know what you're going to get. And Tua, as much as they praise him and as many segments as they use on SportsCenter and Get Up and all these other shows, that's Captain Checkdown. He's
seems
a check
timid.
Down Charlie.
Very timid.
He is not taking shots. I mean, you look at some of the numbers. I'm not a big numbers guy, but you look at some of those numbers, the extra ones like air yards and all that stuff that they come up with. It's not good when it comes to Tua, which is good for the Titans because they could play that defense to keep everything in front of them. I absolutely think that's the best matchup for this team in the wild card. Worst matchup, because obviously they're not going to play the Bills. So we're not going to mention Buffalo. That's down the line. I know Jarrett Stillman, he's, you know, whoa, Buffalo. You don't want to. Okay.
A little recency bias there.
The Chiefs are better than them. That's the bottom line. The Chiefs are better. That's the team. If there's no team you want to play, it's the Chiefs. But that's down the line, second, third round of the playoffs. But this first one, the Ravens are the team you don't want. I like them against the Browns because I don't think. I mean, look at all the stuff that went wrong in that first half, and that game still was close. Now, granted, the final score doesn't indicate the overall picture, mm-hmm. but neither does the finish in the first half.
Very true.
Browns scored, what, 3 points in the second half?
Yeah, and we're still able to move the ball a little bit and still couldn't get in the end zone.
So I think all things remaining equal, not having a tackle-eligible pass to Aaron Brewer, not having a run that was clearly a first, well, I'm not going to say clearly, but appeared to be a first down on fourth and one, not having that, and then not having, you know, Jarvis Landry throw a left-handed pass, and this was a penalty on Rashawn Evans that I don't get why they called that. I didn't know that you could rough the passer on a end-around pass, but, I mean, that's just me. But not having all those things, I think the game is different. And I'm not working on ifs. I'm just looking at how it would be in the next game, because all of those things aren't going to repeat itself. So for all that, I say the Browns are a solid matchup. But the one that you want the Miami Dolphins. You don't want the Baltimore Ravens. Because you don't want Cookie Monster, who I kind of sound like right now, Calais Campbell. You ever notice he always sounds like he needs something to drink?
Oh, he's got the raspiest voice in the league.
Oh, the raspiest voice. I'll never forget, man, Jaguars game in Jacksonville last year. It was a Thursday night one. Mm-hmm. It was rainy. I remember just before the game, actually before they came out for warm-ups, it started raining. So I ducked inside into the tunnel, and I was in the Jaguars tunnel. And I just hear, like, the loudest claps I ever heard in my life.
Oh, no.
And I turn around, and I hear this voice. I saw, that's Calais Campbell. He came around the corner saying some stuff and clapping. Like, it was like a condor.
Oh, man.
Clapping. And I just looked like, daggone it. Those interior guys are about to have a problem today just looking at him. But
the meanness of John Henderson with the voice of the Cookie Monster.
Right. And instead of having somebody slap him, he was slapping his hands together, but it made the same sound. And for those of you who don't know about John Henderson, a Tennessee product, he used to always want to slap before the game. He was like, hit me one time. And they'd slap him. And he'd be like, oh, do it again. Bap. And they keep doing it until he starts leaking, until he starts bleeding. And then that's when he was ready to go out and play. Hey. Whatever floats your boat.
Hey, it worked.
Hey, if it works for you, it doesn't work for me, but that's all right for you. So, hey, so be it. But, yeah, man, the Ravens are a team that you don't want. I'll tell you another team that you don't want, and that's an extra team that was playing on Sunday Night Football, and I almost did it earlier, but I said, let's save it for Blow the Whistle. Let me get that music.
Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle.
Yeah, just had to get my little boogie on, because you know what? As Elijah said, we're blowing the whistle on the whistleblowers. That sideline judge, I mean.
How?
You blind. Homeboy, you can't see. You need to wear sunglasses like DMC. I wish Chris
Where's
was on
Chris
to hear
now?
That.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's, yo, that old Run DMC song, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, man, how do you... You're right on top of the play. There were screenshots, and this is what I love about you fans out there and you ladies and gentlemen that are so swift with Photoshop or the different just screen capture apps. You captured it, and this dude was looking right at – he could have told you what kind of cleats Aaron Jones had on. If he had Adidas on – or he had Pro Keds on, he could have told you the difference in the two. You know, Pro Keds got
extra stripe. That's an old
you know
school
what I'm saying?
One right there.
You know, I know because I used to have to settle for those instead of Adidas. But
those
that's
are
a different story.
Days.
Yeah. Pre-Converse. Shout out to Master P. Master P and who was that?
Master P and
it's an athlete. They're looking at buying Converse. But, I mean, we're going all
Baron
over
Davis.
The place. Baron Davis, yeah. We're going all over the place. But the fact of the matter is I am blowing the whistle on the whole official crew, but especially the sideline judge, because there's just no way you don't miss that. And I get it, Aaron Rodgers, you know, like you want to be able to review it, but Aaron Rodgers got to that line so quickly, called the play. I mean, he clearly stepped out of bounds.
And I think they knew. I think they knew he probably did. Or else they
should have
the line that fast.
They should have known. But I also have to shout out Mike Vrabel, because he had the opportunity to say, hey, you know, that was a terrible – because I asked him about it. Or no, I didn't ask him about that. I wanted to ask him, but somebody else did. I mean, not take credit for someone else's question. I think it was Rex Rode, Joe Rex Rode. But they asked him about the call, and it was really interesting to me how – he didn't focus on the call. He focused on, hey, we should have got him in the backfield. That's just one of the things, like the small things about Mike Vrabel that you just have to love. And even someone like me who you know, I don't have a horse in the race. I'm not a Titans fan. I'm a fan of football. I enjoy those things about Mike Vrabel. So shout out to Coach. Blow the whistle on the whistleblowers. And on that note, we are going to get up out of here. Appreciate Chris Sanders coming on, as always. My guy, Aaron Wilson, definitely shout out to him for coming on. And the homegirl, the homie Sarah Barship, ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Texans. Shout out to Elijah. Hey, folks. Happy New Year. Let's say that. Everybody be safe. 2021, it's going to be an awesome year. Let's turn things around after a rough 2020. As long as you wake up, it's a good day. Keep that in mind. Thanks for tuning in. God bless and good night.